please.
Ms. Bowden, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. I've reserved 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. May it please the court. A cochlear implant must be properly mapped in order for a child using the device to hear what her teachers and classmates are saying. Despite the importance of mapping to the child's education, the Secretary of Education has excluded mapping from the related services available under the IDEA. These mapping regulations are invalid because they are contrary to the plain language of the statute. The IDEA defines related services to include audiology services. Based on its ordinary meaning, an audiology service is a service that involves the treatment of a hearing disorder. Mapping clearly satisfies this definition because it is the process through which an audiologist calibrates a type of hearing aid known as a cochlear implant to ensure that the hearing aid delivers sound to the deaf user in a way that that person can understand it. The district court did not dispute that mapping is an audiology service. Instead, the court upheld the mapping regulations by finding ambiguity in the statutory exception to the related services definition. This exception excludes, quote...
Before you go into the Secretary's argument on that, what's your response to the Secretary's other argument that you have to interpret the word audiology in the context of this bill, of this statute, which is an education statute, so that one way, you could certainly view audiology broadly as you do, or you could view it as the types of audiology services provided in a school.
Our view is that if Congress had intended to include only a subset of audiology services, it could have so indicated. The related services definition itself makes clear that there are many services that are provided that aren't limited in a similar way. For example, social services, psychologist services, and in fact, where Congress intended to include only a subset of services and those particularly related to the educational setting, it explicitly did so. For example, the statute expressly provides for school nursing services.
Right, but the school nurses are ubiquitous. I mean, all schools have school nurses, whereas not all schools have school audiologists. I mean, isn't it right that the audiology services schools get are usually through an audiologist who comes in one day a week or for a couple of hours to do the testing? They don't have audiologists on staff like they have nurses, right? Isn't that right?
Many school districts have an audiologist on staff, maybe not in each particular school, but that's generally not considered a basis for excluding a particular service from the definition of related services. In fact, one of the main reasons that Congress enacted the IDEA is because the schools lacked the personnel to deliver the type of services that children with disabilities needed.
Yes. So your view is that prior to this amendment, the statute clearly covered cochlear implants?
That's correct. And it did so by the use of audiology.
Right. And suppose instead of a cochlear implant, we're talking about a new kind of, I just read the other day about a new kind of surgical procedure. It's not an implant, but it's a surgical procedure that dramatically improves hearing. Now, would that be covered under your theory? Because is that audiology?
It would depend on I mean, I think I would want to know a little bit more about the service, but there is an important limitation on the school's responsibility, and that's that the schools are not required to maximize a child's hearing, and that was the Supreme Court's decision in Rowley. As long as the school provides an appropriate education, that's sufficient. And so if a child...
Well, then why would a cochlear implant have been covered?
Because if... I'm sorry, why is the...
Why pre-amendment would a cochlear implant have been covered? I mean, children could benefit from the education system through sign language, correct? In fact, a lot of parents, as I understand it, don't want cochlear implants, correct?
That's correct.
They believe their children can perform just as well in school with sign language. So why would the cochlear implant have been required pre-amendment?
It's not required. All we're saying, a related service...
I mean funded. It's considered a related service.
Correct.
I didn't mean required.
It would only be required in the situation in which the parents and the school district working together, the IEP process, has determined that that's the appropriate way to educate the child. And if a child is both...
Suppose in my example, the parents decide that they want this surgery that doesn't involve an implant.
If the school and the parents decide that the child can be adequately educated in an alternative method, the Supreme Court's decision in Rowley makes it clear that that service...
Suppose a school will take... I see. So your view is if it's in the IEP, it's covered, right, as a related service. Suppose a school says, well, we don't think it's a related service, so we're not going to put it in the IEP.
If it falls within the plain meaning of related service, and if it's... If the child
so,
cannot
that's
receive...
just circular. I mean, so that brings us back to what does audiology mean, correct?
Right. And the ordinary meaning of audiology is the treatment of a hearing disorder. Mm-hmm. And there has been no dispute that mapping treats a hearing disorder. In fact, there's no dispute...
What is your best evidence or your best argument in your view to suggest that audiology does not unambiguously include mapping?
Unambiguously? I mean, we rely on the plain meaning of audiology, which is the treatment of a hearing disorder. And I think it's important to note that there's no dispute, even from the government, that when an audiologist programs an acoustical hearing aid, that that's an audiology service, and that's covered as a related service. So when a child, you know, who has moderate hearing loss uses a digital hearing aid, he is entitled to go to the audiologist, get it programmed. That's covered under the IDEA as a related service because it's an audiology service. A child, however, with profound hearing loss that uses a cochlear implant can go to the same audiologist, have a similar programming occur, and that's now excluded under related services. But I don't see any basis for distinguishing between one and the other as one being audiology and the other not. The plain meaning of audiology is the treatment of a hearing disorder. This is a service that can only be provided by a licensed audiologist. I mean, if there's any sort of service that falls sort of at the core of audiology, you would think it would be the programming of a hearing aid to deliver sound to a deaf person in a way that they can understand it. I mean, that's
can
what
they,
we're talking
the,
about here.
Can the Federal Register announcement says that the difference between this and other audiology services is that these are can't be done on site, that they have to be done by a specialist who has the equipment. Is that true? What about the, I was interested, I'm glad you brought up the regular hearing aid thing. I was wondering about that also. But is it called mapping for a hearing aid?
I don't believe it's called mapping.
What did you call it?
I call it programming.
Programming, okay. Can that be done by the school audiologist, or does that require special training also?
I mean, it would depend on the school. And there are some schools, it's rare, but there are some school audiologists that can actually program a cochlear implant. But today...
Let me try to ask the question this way.
Sure.
Is the... generally, are the school audiologists the ones the schools use for testing hearing and, you know, making adjustments in hearing aids, are they able to do the programming for the hearing aid?
I don't know if I would say generally. In many cases, no. That's especially true with the latest technology for an acoustical hearing aid is a digital hearing aid, and that is typically requires a greater level of expertise.
Well, just in terms of of the status of this argument from our perspective. Were there any comments made on this, making the point you just are? In other words, did anybody bring this to the department's attention? That is, that they were developing a system for monitor, for that, that their distinction between between mapping a cochlear implant and programming a hearing aid, that they're treating them differently?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly...
There are comments on that?
I believe there were comments pointing out the that as a basis of this regulation, children with cochlear implants are treated differently than children with traditional hearing aids. I mean, there's no dispute, and the regulations still make clear that the selecting and fitting of a hearing aid is covered under audiology.
Yes, but I thought the argument was is that the does the school do the selecting and the fitting of the hearing aid, or is that done by a doctor and then the adjustments are done at the school? Do you know? I mean, do the schools actually fit the hearing aid, select it and fit it, or do they send them the children out for that?
I mean, I would expect an audiologist to do it. It could certainly be the case that if a school has an audiologist, I see my time is up.
I have several questions to ask you. First of all, audiology is defined in the regulations, and you are not challenging those definitions.
It's not a comprehensive definition.
I don't think you need to, because if you look at C1, little three I's, provision of habilitative activities, which is, I looked up habilitative, and the best definition is equipping something to work, and in that same hearing evaluation. I mean, these audiology services that we are talking about, the mapping, I think clearly come under the regulations definition of audiology, which is the closest definition to audiology services. There is no statutory definition of audiology services.
That's correct.
Okay. What I'm trying to figure out is if there's a way that these regs can be read, and I think there is, to allow the mapping. And the easiest way I would find, have you got your joint appendix?
Sure.
All right. If you would turn to 273 in the joint appendix, where all the regs are set out. And one of the ones you challenge is 300.34, right?
Correct. That and 300.113B.
Let's do 34 first. and looking specifically at what you've challenged, B1. Related services do not include a medical device that is surgically implanted, the optimization of that device's functioning, i.e. mapping, maintenance, or replacement. Then nothing that was just said, that is two, nothing in paragraph B1 of this section, if you go to three, little 3I, prevents the routine checking of an external component of the cochlear implant to make sure it is functioning properly, as required in 113B. When you go to 113B, which is on 277, again it says, and it starts out by saying that every public agency has to ensure that hearing aids are functioning properly. Mm-hmm. That's under A. Then you look at B and you think, well, they're also going to ensure that the external components of the cochlear implants are functioning properly. And indeed, that's what B says. But B2 says that the post-surgical maintenance and programming is what is not to be provided by the public agency. Now, the Department of Education lifted part of the language from the original statutory enactment, that is that post-surgical maintenance and programming,
correct,
without regard to the rest of that original language, which itself was an exception to the exception. That is, other than the cost of performing routine maintenance and monitoring of such external device, which says to me that at the same time they were, the Congress was considering originally excluding not only the device but the mapping, and they said we're going to exclude the device, the post-surgical maintenance programming or replacement, but other than the cost of performing routine maintenance and monitoring. And that's a long-winded way of getting back to 300.113, which I think it's a strained reading, but if you read two to be limited only to post-surgical maintenance and programming, in other words, the implant is inserted or is placed, the hospital does the post-surgical maintenance and programming, and that is what, in order to read B1 to have any meaning at all, that is what's banned, just the post-surgical. What do you think of that?
Well, we certainly have no objection to that reading. I mean, I guess, you know, one concern is that...
We're not talking about external device. Yes. That's not contested, is it?
Yes, sir.
The maintenance of the external portion?
No. I mean, to the extent that they have to make sure it's functioning.
That's not what's at issue.
No, to the extent that
what this language refers to, external.
Right.
That's not an issue.
Confused. I thought mapping was...
It was internal.
No, it was the little processor and the computer and so forth. I don't know how they can touch the inside.
The internal is, and unless I completely misread this record, there's no dispute about the external maintenance. None. It's the internal is what we're talking about.
Well, we're talking about the programming. So it's more sort of the software.
There are two parts to this.
Correct.
And there's external and internal.
Right.
This, what Judge Henderson just read is about the external.
But the mapping, I mean.
That's what Judge Henderson just read.
Correct.
Is about,
okay. Correct. The point, though, I was going to make is that the map is stored, you know, on hardware that is external.
I understand, but the correction that we're talking about is to the internal piece.
It's to both.
I understand you have a net result to the external, but we're talking about the internal piece. That's what the fight is about, at least unless I totally missed this.
I don't think that's right.
You're not losing anything on the external. You're getting the external corrections as necessary. That's not in dispute. Let me ask you another. I mean, unless I'm completely missing this, it's not the external piece that's at issue.
I mean, I guess the problem I'm having with the distinction is, I mean, there's two pieces of hardware. It's
right.
Essentially like
one's
the CPU.
One's an implant, one's not.
Right, the CPU and sort of the monitor.
But this
right.
is all about implanted stuff.
It's about the map. It's about the software.
But it's about the difference between what we're going to give you for implanted as opposed to the explanted. The exterior piece of it. Yes, there are two pieces, but the crucial thing is there's an implant. That's what this fight is about.
Certainly, it's crucial there's an implant, but the only change that's made during the mapping process is a change made to the software stored on the external portion of the device.
That's exactly right, because the only way to touch the implant is to replace it. Isn't that correct?
Right.
And when they map, they are, yes, of course, they're changing how the electrode is stimulating whatever, but they can only monitor and only do it through the external components, which are made up of at least two or three things, right?
Right.
What are they?
There's the microphone that takes in the right. sound. It then goes to the processor that has the map that converts it to signals that then is transmitted, you know, by FM radio waves into a receiver inside the child's head that goes to the implant.
It's like monitoring a computer. When you say, well, we're going to change the software or whatever, you don't take the computer apart.
Right.
Isn't the distinction between, as I understood it, the regulations make very clear that the school is still responsible for making sure that the outside piece is functioning, correct? That the batteries work, that it's properly connected.
Correct.
That's different from the mapping, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The mapping gets to the internal operation.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me in my mind, in thinking this through, that you can achieve that by doing things without going into the head. That's not the point. The point is whether the correction is to the implant.
There's no change, though, made to the implant. The map changes.
The implant isn't made more effective by virtue of mapping?
I mean,
I'm totally lost then, if that's the case. Then I don't know what this case is about. I've completely lost it because the external is like the hearing aid device in my mind. That's, you know, that's there's no fight about that.
Right.
The question that I thought was at issue here is the correction. And it doesn't matter that you can do that from the outside, that you can do it from another building by electrodes or whatever. I thought the point was we're not going to do anything or pay for anything that achieves an enhancement of the implanted portion. An enhancement of the implanted portion.
And I mean, I think I would disagree with it.
No, I'm asking. I'm telling you, I'm lost now.
Okay. The mapping is essentially the software that runs on the computer. When you change that, it's the equivalent of changing sort of the picture that shows up on the monitor, right? There's no change to the actual or improvement of the actual internal part of the device.
No, that's precisely my point. When you change software, you're enhancing the internal operation of the computer.
That's exactly what
you're doing.
You make it so that it operates more effectively for this particular user.
You may knock a button off or the keyboard may be wrong, and those are external pieces that you fix. But when you change the internal software or operating system, you're changing something in the guts as opposed to outside.
But, well, the guts and the operating system is outside.
Look, the distinction the Secretary made here is in the Federal Register. He says the distinction between the services not covered, such as mapping, and those that are covered, such as verifying that a cochlear implant is properly functioning, turns on expertise. That's the Secretary's distinction. He says the monitoring of the surgically implanted device requires expertise not available in school. That's the distinction I understood the Secretary was making, that adjusting the external part of it can be done in the school because it can be done by the audiologist, probably even by the teacher, but that the mapping requires an expertise not available in the school. That's the distinction, right?
That's one of the distinctions.
Well, that's the distinction the Secretary makes.
One that the Secretary makes.
What's the other one?
The cost. And yeah. I'll first address expertise, and then I'll address cost.
Oh, wait, before you do that, let me just ask you one other aspect about this, okay? Secretary says, and I'm looking at the Federal Register. Secretary says that although the implant must be properly mapped for the child to hear in school, it does not have to be done in school to be effective.
That's correct.
You agree with that, right?
That's correct.
Okay. That's the other distinction here is that, I mean, and I'm just trying to articulate what I think the Secretary's view is.
Well, you've got an easy answer to that, right? I mean, you could say that about anything.
You can say that about anything. Well, all of
everything,
the,
everything can be done
everything
outside.
Everything in the related services.
You can't say that about a hearing aid that has a dead battery.
Sure, it can be done outside.
No, but the child can't benefit in the school from a hearing aid with a dead battery, whereas a child can benefit in school from a cochlear implant that isn't perfectly mapped. That's what they're saying.
Right, but there are probably close to 10 specific services identified in the related services provision, and at least 8 of those could just as easily be provided outside of school hours as they are inside. And so if that was a distinction,
I understood him to be saying here that it didn't need to be provided in order for the child to benefit from this education.
I don't take the Secretary as saying that. In fact, the Secretary
it didn't need to be done in the school.
That's true.
Yeah, okay. Right.
And, but our point is that the other things identified as related services also can be done after school, before school, on the weekend.
Well, that's a good point. Okay. Well, you were about... Sorry, Harry. Go ahead.
I'll ask one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
83 regs about which there's a battle. Mm-hmm. Say that audiology includes the determination of a child's need for group and individual amplification, selecting and fitting the appropriate aid, and evaluating the effectiveness of amplification. You buy that?
That's the regulations say, yes. And we also buy that mapping falls within that.
Well, mapping doesn't, if the secretary is right, that mapping doesn't do amplification.
But as you read, so the first...
Nothing else that would be at issue here.
What's
noted? Determination of the child's need for individual amplification, which is not what mapping does. Selecting and fitting, that's not the fight here. And evaluating the effectiveness of amplification. It doesn't cover amplification.
We would say fitting is part of the fight here. This is fitting. And as the district court acknowledged that fitting can mean to make sure the technical fitting to make sure it works properly. And as we point out, it's noticeable that of the three provisions there, the first and the last are specifically tied to amplification.
Right.
The middle one, selecting and fitting an aid, does not contain that limitation. It's selecting and fitting any aid.
Intuitive. Well, yours is self-serving. Mine is, I'm coming at it differently. I would never have put selecting and fitting an appropriate aid in the category of programming it to enhance it. I mean, it at best, it's ambiguous. Now, you quickly said it includes mapping. I quickly surmised when I read it the first time, it couldn't possibly include mapping. It's just selecting and fitting the device to the ear, that's all.
But mapping, even under that view, that doesn't mean mapping isn't included in the 1983 regulations. That provision discussing audiology says audiology includes those things.
Right.
The regulations define include to mean including but not limited to related services. It's the 1983 regulations.
Well, you've got to win or lose on audiology the way at the bottom. I mean,
correct.
You don't, you've got the anomaly, as your secretary points out, that it would be quite strange to conclude that there's no doubt that under the assisted services you cannot get this benefit, but you say there's no doubt you can under related. And I think it rests heavily on audiology. But it's a strange result to say it is absolutely clear that this is not, it cannot be gained under assisted services.
I have two responses. First, we don't think that's a strange result because Congress didn't amend the assisted technology services definition to exclude mapping. What Congress did was amend the assisted technology device, and it's clear that Congress did that because they don't want the device itself to be included in the services provided under the IDEA.
But the clear effect of that is to eliminate mapping, right?
And we don't dispute that. But if the point is, doesn't this really lead to an anomalous result? We would say no, because it achieves exactly what Congress was intending to do.
Which is what?
To exclude the device from the definition of assisted technology device.
Yeah.
And it achieves that. You know, Congress, in our view, Congress could have achieved that result by only amending one definition and by simply inserting the exception, the statutory exception, to the assisted technology device. And so then what the government calls the anomaly is the fact that it also used the same language in the related services provision. But the fact that even if you take that as being superfluous in that context, it doesn't change the plain meaning of the statute. I mean, the courts have made clear that sometimes Congress has superfluous language. It's particularly common in exceptions. It's particularly, it would be the most common here, when Congress wants to achieve a particular result, which is to exclude the device. It could have probably done it by only making one change, but it does two changes to make it perfectly clear that the device itself isn't covered. And we don't think that provides basis for a departing from the plain meaning of device to say.
You win or lose in your view on our agreement or disagreement in your position that audiology absolutely includes mapping?
No, we also have arguments that the under Chevron step two, this is contrary to the purpose. But we do, you know, our main argument is
mushy,
on audiology.
Right? You're in very mushy land when you go there. You're really pushing hard. You've got to win on audiology covers mapping.
Right. I mean, the government doesn't dispute that point. I mean, what the government is trying to say here, their main argument on appeal, which I should note, is that the secretary never claimed to be reconciling a conflict between assisted technology provisions.
No, I'm forgetting all of that now.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I understand.
Right.
You have to win on your claimed definition of audiology. It has to include mapping.
In order to prevail under Chevron step one.
In order to prevail.
Okay.
I'm asking. I don't know how else you prevail.
Well, I mean, under
audiology doesn't include mapping. How else are you going to win?
Right. No.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me ask you one other question. You were about to shift to costs. I want to be sure I understand what costs we're talking about here. I looked at the district court decision in New Hampshire, which involved the same child. Mm-hmm. I gather that the mapping is actually paid for by insurance, right?
Frequently, yes.
And that what we're talking about here is a $10 copay and mileage.
That was what we were talking about. That's what I would have been talking about 10 years ago. I mean, it's changed, and the insurance changes.
What is the situation? I mean, I know there's nothing in the record, but what? Just tell us, what are we talking about? Is this covered by insurance or by Medicaid?
Medicaid frequently covers it. Private insurance typically covers it. It doesn't always, if my clients have had an experience where they were in between insurance plans where some of the mapping costs they had to cover themselves. But on cost, that was a ground relied on by the secretary, but there's nothing in the administrative record that tells what the cost is of sending a child to an audiologist for mapping.
Well, but they do have that. How much it would cost to do it in the school?
Right, it would cost $30,000 to $40,000 to build your own audiology lab. But
well, are there any comments from anybody who said, "Gee, it's not that expensive if you do it outside"? I didn't see any.
Okay, yeah, I'm not aware of any, but still,
you
I mean,
see
to
why I'm
cost.
You see why I'm asking though.
Right.
I mean, this the record we have to decide this case on is a record before us.
Right.
And if no one brought that to the secretary's attention, that's not an issue we can deal with.
Well, but nobody also brought to the secretary's attention what the cost actually is. So if the secretary was going to rely on that, you would expect the cost would need to be in the record to say that this service is so expensive that we should exclude it based on cost. You would expect the secretary to be able to.
They have that $40,000 figure.
But there's nothing to suggest that a school needs to do it.
No, but we're going in circles. My point is, I don't think anybody pointed that out to the secretary.
Okay. All right, let me get back to the language. Is there any other way to optimize the device's functioning other than through the external component, through the programming?
I mean, in order for it to work, for the program to work, it needs to be mapped. You can't get around that. I mean, I think they're
right. And when you map it, you're programming it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you're optimizing the implant's efficacy. Mm-hmm. And you can only do that through the external components.
That's right.
Even though it has the crucial and critical effect on the internal component, is there any maintenance or programming that can be done to the implant other than replacing it?
Not that I'm aware of. No, right. The mapping is there's nothing wrong with the internal part of it. It's customization. It's switching the inputs so that for this particular user it works most effectively to help this child based on his or her own deficiencies in hearing. So that's all it's doing. It's not really even maintenance, in the sense that there's anything wrong with it. It's simply a customization to the unique needs of a particular child.
And let me ask you, Judge Tatel asked you about the sign language. The cochlear implant allows the child to learn to speak as well. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a pretty tight correlation between a child's ability to hear sound and to speak well.
That's a very important difference between a child with a cochlear implant who will hopefully be able to speak because of it and a child who remains mute but can use sign language.
It certainly is. And, in considering that option, I think that's also highly relevant to this consideration of cost. For the cochlear implant, the mapping is something that happens usually twice a year. The record doesn't say how expensive it is, but in my client's experiences, we're talking $300 to $400 a trip to the audiologist. If you choose interpreting sign language instead of that, now you're talking about putting an additional staff member into the classroom to sign to the child all day. If cost is the consideration, it's hard to imagine why encouraging people to use sign language and the need to have someone available to sign to the child would be more cost effective than simply providing for mapping twice a year.
Let me just ask you one thing to make sure I'm understanding, because your argument has shifted a bit now in response to Judge Henderson. Have you argued that this is nothing more than an adjustment to the external portion of the device, which would be covered under the existing regulations? Has that been your argument, that this is, you're mistaken? This isn't, this has nothing to do with the implant. This is merely tinkering with the external. Is that, because that's the way you're a smart guy. I'm listening to you. Have you argued the case this way?
No, and I don't mean
not.
To now.
I mean, that's my whole point. This is like, where did that come from? Did I spend all this time in this case and I've missed it? This is a fight about the implant.
I would say it's a fight about the software and programming
but
that.
You're
and
being, I understand you got to do your job as an attorney, but you have never argued this point that I'm hearing now. What's the fuss about? This is only external tinkering, like the hearing aid and everything else. It's just all, that's all this is. You've never argued it that way.
No, I mean, okay. It would be covered. We would,
I just want to make sure you have never, this has never been before. Okay. Because I'm shocked at what I'm hearing now.
The only point I was trying to make in response to Judge Henderson is this is, the programming is a changing of the software, and the software
is... You responded to Judge Henderson incorrectly. You responded exactly as you should, but I want to make sure I'm understanding this response was not consistent with the way you've been arguing this case.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. There's
no further
questions.
We'll give you some time in response. Mr. Domley?
May it please the Court, Sarang Domley for the Department of Education. I just want to start where, just to pin down the point that Judge Edwards made, the distinction between external and internal components, that's not something that was ever presented in this case. But just to answer your concern, the way that mapping works is that it is the programming it's programming that changes the electrical impulses that are going into this internal component. And the process is sort of this feedback between what's happening inside the ear and what the program is putting out. And so mapping involves both, as I think my fellow counsel conceded, involves both the external and internal components.
Of course it does, but the mapping, the physical mapping, whatever it describes, involves the audiologist tinkering with, changing, modifying, whatever, the external components in order to optimize the implant. Isn't that correct?
It's in relation to what's happening inside the ear. So the programming is not just of the, it's not like changing, charging a battery. It's not solely about the external component.
I'm not saying that it is.
Right.
I'm saying the only physical activity that mapping involves is handling these outside components and what they do to the inside component.
I think that's a fair point, but I just that doesn't really change the nature of this case, where the dispute is really, there's no question that the regulations that the Secretary issued exclude mapping. I mean, the regulations were entirely about, the discussion in the preamble was entirely about whether mapping was included or excluded. And so I don't think there's any real question that, even if there's ambiguity, the Secretary meant to exclude mapping from the scope of the regulations. And the question here is whether that's consistent with what Congress has enacted.
What about counsel's argument that this treats, that digital hearing aids also require the equivalent of mapping, yet that's covered and this isn't?
Well, I just emphasize that what the Secretary is doing here is not interpreting the scope of the related services provision just as a general matter, but interpreting the scope of that provision in light of a very specific exclusion that Congress has enacted related to surgically implanted medical devices. And the Congress did that in both the assistive technology device provision and the related services provision.
So you mean, yeah, it might be inconsistent. There might be some inconsistency here, but that's a consequence of what Congress
did. Of what Congress did, that's
is
exactly
that your
right.
Point?
That is my point, yes. And so the extent that, for instance, in certain, generally speaking, the Secretary's position is that personally prescribed devices are not within the scope of the IDEA, but the Secretary has acknowledged that
what
in certain
kind of devices?
Personally prescribed devices, so things like eyeglasses, hearing aids, that sort of thing, generally are not within the scope. Like, they don't generally expect school districts to provide them, but the Secretary has acknowledged that that is something that school districts could provide within the scope of the IDEA, that if an IEP required it, that school districts could provide it. And so that's somewhat separate. And generally, the
Does
way
that include a hearing aid?
That includes hearing aids, yes. And importantly, the way that the Secretary has done that has been through the assistive technology provisions, not through the more general related services provisions. We cite a number of letters in our brief that discuss this general issue about personally prescribed devices, these are interpretive letters, and in each of them, the Secretary is discussing the assistive technology provision. As counsel conceded, there's no question here that the assistive technology provisions do not include the provision of mapping. The fact that hearing aids are provided and that the programming of hearing aids may be provided, that's something that's a consequence of the assistive technology provisions.
Why are you so clear that audiology does not include mapping?
The reason it's ambiguous, we don't think it's clear that it doesn't include mapping. The reason that it's ambiguous is as a consequence of what is happening. Well, first of all, even just taking the term on its own, it's not clear that it includes everything that the dictionary says should include all the audiology services. We think that interpretive approach is contrary to what the Supreme Court
says. Just say why.
I really would like the narrow question answered first.
Sure. Well,
why are you so clear? They're clear that mapping is absolutely included a part of audiology no matter where you look.
You're saying
not so.
Not so. Well, I think it's
not so.
Well, I think you have to look at the use of the term audiology services in light of what's happening in the assistive technology provisions, which more directly address the question here. What services does a school district have to provide for a particular kind of device? Like a hearing aid, this is a type of, the Secretary believes, is like an assistive technology device. And so it makes more sense to look at the more specific provisions.
On the one hand, you have this argument you can make that this would be anomalous. But on the other hand, I could argue, I think fairly effectively, not necessarily, you have two separate provisions in the statute. One goes to assistive services, one is related. We don't want any confusion. There's no reason to put it under assisted services if it's covered by related services. That's the result. That's all we've accomplished. I take you back to, because that's a perfectly plausible way to read this. I don't care whether it's covered by assisted services or not. That doesn't answer the question as to whether it's covered by related services. So now the question is, why are you so clear that audiology does not include mapping?
Well, I would just go back to what the point that Judge Tatel made, is that if you're looking at audiology services, that term in isolation, which we don't think is the right way to approach this.
I thought your answer, I didn't hear you saying that audiology unambiguously excludes mapping.
No, your position was it was ambiguous.
That's correct. My only position is that it's ambiguous.
But I want to get a defense of that, too. Why? It's not enough to say it's ambiguous because I say it's ambiguous.
I think you have to read the term audiology services. It's not unambiguous.
Why is it ambiguous? It could be construed this way or that way. A person can make a case to support that proposition. Make your case.
The reason it's ambiguous is because because both of the context of the IDEA, which relates to educational services, and also the fact that there is a specific exclusion for surgically implanted medical devices, which at least creates some doubt as to the services attendant to surgically implanted medical devices that school districts must provide.
Was there doubt before that exclusion was added?
That's something that the Secretary hasn't taken a position on.
Well, you can take one for me.
I wouldn't want to, Your Honor, because this is something that the Secretary never had occasion to address, whether mapping was something that had to be provided under the IDEA.
I'm trying to figure out how much you're resting on that exclusion.
Resting very heavily on the exclusion, Your Honor. I think that's important to note.
You're saying mapping, this ambiguous term may well have been included in audiology before, but the addition of this new language does it? That's your argument.
The addition of the new language in both the related services provision and, importantly, in the assistive technology provision, which more directly addresses services that have to be provided for devices.
Now, the problem you have with that argument, of course, is that audiology still remains in the statute.
That's true, but it's not. You can't look at that term in isolation. You have to look at it in the context of the entire act. And I think given...
How does the exclusion knock it out if the broader provision starting out says this is what's included? And audiology is included, and if audiology includes mapping, and mapping is not the surgical implant's already been done. That's what the exclusion excludes the surgical implant.
Even assuming arguendo that the term audiology services includes mapping, we don't concede that,
right?
Even if we assuming arguendo, I think given that what Congress did in 2004 was say through the assistive technology provisions that this
I don't think that works for you. If you concede that audiology clearly covers mapping, I think there's two reasons why you can't get anywhere with your assistive technology argument. Number one is you didn't make it in the district court. That's number one. But number two is that if you've got a clear provision that would be Chevron 1 provision, namely it's clear, the only thing the assistive technology thing does for you is that that leaves open the question of mapping. Sure, that's the result of what Congress did, but you can't say the assistive technology provision reflects clear congressional intent to exclude mapping. That's why I go back to what Judge Edwards says at the beginning, which is both of your cases, both sides, you rise and fall on audiology.
If
audiology is clear and unambiguous, the government loses. If audiology is ambiguous, the government wins if your position is reasonable. You both have the same, we're down to the kernel of this case. So that brings us back. You got to make your case then that audiology is ambiguous. And I've heard you say two things. One is that this is in an education statute, right?
That's right, exactly.
And that therefore you read audiology more or less as the kind of audiology services provided in schools.
That's right, exactly.
Is there any other support from that? Is there anything else that supports that?
The other thing I would point out is that audiology services, even before the exclusion, had to be read in light of the assistive technology provisions. And we think that if you look at the list of services provided in the related... If you look at the list, all of the services listed are services that are generally provided to the student themselves, not services provided in relation to a particular kind of device.
Yeah,
if you look at what services need to be provided in relation to some sort of assistive device, you look to the assistive technology services provision, which is more specific.
Well, then what does the related services provision add?
Well, the related services provision...
You're saying the way I read this is I say, okay, if I want to know what related services are, I look to assistive technology.
If you're looking just at the Act as a whole, if you're looking to see, if the question is, what services do I have to provide for a hearing aid or for a cochlear implant or for eyeglasses, you would look more naturally to the assistive technology device provision and the assistive technology services provision, which very specifically address.
Then what role does the related services provision? The related services provision looks to me to be like a more general provision.
That's right. It is a more general.
Then there is space between. I mean, just because it's not listed in assistive technology services or assistive technology doesn't mean it's not. Potentially, you're not arguing that, are you? You're not arguing that in order to be a related service, it has to be listed as an assistive technology device?
If it's something in relation to an assistive technology device, if it's a service that relates to a particular kind of device, then I think, if it's not listed in the services, I think at least creates a question, right? I only have to get to ambiguity. At least creates a question as to whether that's something that needs to be provided, nevertheless, as part of the related services provision. So that's my only point.
Can anyone but an audiologist do the mapping?
No, it has to be done by an audiologist that has 450 hours of direct contact with people with cochlear implants.
In other words, the child can't do it, the parents can't do it,
the
principal can't do it, audiologist.
Not any audiologist, not sort of an educational audiologist, which is typically the kind of audiologist that comes to the school. It has to be a very specialized kind of audiologist.
Let me ask you this. Can you give me an example of an external component checking rather ensuring, as the regulation says, ensuring that an external component of the cochlear implant is functioning properly.
Yeah.
Are you talking about batteries? Are you
right, we're talking about batteries. We're talking about, so the three things that the secretary listed in the preamble were checking that the batteries are charged, making sure the device is actually turned on, and making sure that the cables are plugged in. Those are things that you don't need an audiologist to do, that's something that any layperson could do without very much training at all, if any training. And that it creates, as Judge Tatel pointed out, a sort of acute problem that has to be corrected at school without, unless the cables are plugged in, unless the batteries are charged, unless the device is turned on, the device doesn't function at all. And so that's the sort of thing that the secretary meant to preserve as something that schools have to provide.
This is the same, because that's the same language with respect to hearing aids, so that all the public agency has to do with respect to hearing aids is simply ensure that they're turned on?
They ensure that they're, yeah, turned on and that the cables are plugged in, yes.
I'm talking about a hearing aid.
Oh, hearing aids? Oh, well, for hearing aids, then we're in a different...
I'm asking you this. The same language that puts the burden on the public agency to ensure that hearing aids are functioning properly is the same language used with respect to implanted medical devices, that is, that the public agency ensures that the external components are functioning properly.
We're looking at 300.113. That's in a section that's discussing specifically routine checking. So yes, that's what the agency is talking about there. They're talking about this sort of routine checking of hearing aids. Now there are other provisions, the assistive technology regulations, particularly the assistive technology service regulations, that may require provision of other services in relation to acoustical hearing aids. But those would be dealt with in a separate provision.
You're not defending the district court's reasoning for why this is ambiguous, are you?
Well, we believe, what I would say is that we're providing a refinement on the legal basis.
As I said, you don't defend that reasoning, right? You have a new argument.
We have a slight, what we believe is a more correct argument.
Where would I find any evidence of your argument about assistive technology in the...
It was an issue that the plaintiffs raised. The provisions were discussed. This precise argument, I'll concede, wasn't raised below.
Yep.
But we think it's at least appropriate as an alternative basis for affirmance, mm-hmm. For us to raise this. We have no dispute. We're not. We agree with the district court that the district court's fundamental holding that the act is ambiguous. We just believe that there are better reasons for why the act is ambiguous.
And what about the cost issue? The plaintiffs say, you know, this is ridiculous. You just, $40,000 isn't the only way to do this. This can be done outpatient very inexpensively.
Well, I mean, as you pointed out, Judge Tatel, there was no commenter that suggested that outsourcing this task would be inexpensive. And in fact, there were multiple commenters, and this was something that the Senate report discussed as well. There were many commenters that suggested that outsourcing would be very expensive. And there was no commenter suggested that the costs of outsourcing were trivial. I would point out that there are a couple of different costs. There's the cost of the mapping itself, of course, but there's also the cost of transportation. We were talking about mileage in the Petit's case, but you know, in many rural school districts, you know, the nearest cochlear implant mapping center is quite far away. And under the IDEA, the school district would have to pay for transportation to these sometimes very distant cochlear implant mapping centers. And none of this was discussed at length during the rulemaking because no one had presented this argument to the agency that this was something that could be done inexpensively even if it was being outsourced.
What's your answer to their argument when I asked counsel about your argument about that audiology is ambiguous because it could mean just educational audiology, pointed out that, you know, when Congress wants to limit things, it knows how to do it, and specifically it doesn't say just nurses, it says school nurses.
Well, I think what I would say is that, you know, you have to look at the, I mean, it does sometimes, and in other times it simply discusses psychological services, for instance, without limitation. I think it's important to read all audiology services in light of the sort of general context of the act.
Is there any court decision that says that?
I'm sorry, I'm not aware of any, Your Honor.
And is there any other regulation other than this one that would suggest that we're talking, that you interpret the statute that way? Forget audiology for just a minute. Are there any cases which say, Court of Appeals cases or Supreme Court, which say that when you're looking at the words in this statute, many of them are quite general. You just pointed out psychology, nurses, all kinds of things. Are there any cases that say we are to interpret those in view of the fact that they appear in a statute?
Well, I mean, I think the closest case I can think of is the Rowley case from the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court, you know, goes through in some detail and discusses the general purposes of the act and views whether the student there was entitled to a particular kind of service based on what the general purposes of the act were, which is providing access to education.
What was the service in Rowley?
The service in Rowley was a sign language interpreter. And there it was, you know, that was a very fact-specific case because it addressed, you know, there you had a specific student who had, you know, you had a particular record about her accomplishments in school absent the sign language interpreter. And so the court was discussing something very specific, but it just set out a general principle that it's important to keep in mind the general purposes of the act when interpreting the scope of what the act requires.
Can I ask you about the definition of audiology under the reg, which I'm at a loss to understand why we don't concentrate on that, and why the provision of habilitative activities and hearing evaluation would not include mapping, considering the fact that only an audiologist can do mapping?
Well, I would point out that this is not something that the plaintiffs have raised as a basis for their entitlement to mapping.
I read their argument differently, but go ahead. Answer my question, please.
You know, I think that what the secretary is doing is it's interpret. You have to, you know, just take a step back. The secretary is interpreting the scope of a particular exclusion in the 2004 amendments. This predates those 2004 amendments, and so, you know, I don't think that even before 2004 that unambiguously required the provision of cochlear implant mapping.
But you did provide it before 2004.
Well, school districts provided. The secretary never took a position on whether that had to be provided, and importantly, as I was discussing with Judge Tatel, which provision required it. I mean, I think what the secretary has said about other devices, I think it would have been the assistive technology provisions
if
they had to be provided.
Well, are you saying that you ordinarily let school districts spend money that's not authorized? I mean, the fact that you haven't said no to school districts has been being provided to these people for as long as the implants have been available. And to say, well, the department's never really said anything about it. I mean, you're supposed to be the one watching this money, aren't you?
Well, the school districts aren't only, they're principally spending their own money on these services. The IDEA provides.
Provides only 15. Then, if you don't have some responsibility over the expenditure of the funds, whether they're the school districts or come from the federal government, then what are you prohibiting then? If the school district can spend its money without regard to what the Department of Education says, then what are we arguing about?
Well, I don't think we're not saying that school districts are barred. The effect of this regulation
You're
is not to
school
say
districts could do mapping if they
yes,
wanted
absolutely,
to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
If they wanted to.
If they wanted to. We're just saying it's not required.
The IDEA is a standard statute, right? And you're setting minimums.
Exactly.
Things that have to be provided.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
right.
Congress just intervened and excluded
some. Excluded some things.
Right.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So it's up to the school districts. If they want to do mapping, they can, but
even now,
right?
Yes, if they wanted to, they could, and if it were, and there may be reasons they'd want to, but
So what you're actually banning then is the parent who insists on it, rather than the parent who says, "Will you provide this?" and the school district says, "Of course."
Right. Yeah, I think that's a fair reading of what the secretary said.
Oh, I have a lot of other questions, but I think we should stop.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Yeah. Is there any time left? All right. Why don't you take a couple minutes?
First, in response to the argument that the definition of related services may implicitly limit audiology only to educational audiology, as the government has conceded, some of the provisions in related services expressly limit it to school provisions. And the fact that Congress sometimes does so expressly under Rosello versus United States means that the difference between including school in some provisions and excluding it in others should be given effect and should not read an implicit limitation there. Other parts of the related services provision would make no sense if education is read into there. Recreation is included in related services, and so under the government's view, that would be limited to education, recreation. I take medical services are included so long as it's limited to diagnostic purposes. It's hard to imagine how that could be limited to educational medical services. You know, in the Supreme Court's decision in Tatro, the court held that clean intermittent catheterization, the service through which a nurse catheterizes a student, is included in the related services. It's hard to imagine how that would be considered educational. It's the second point is just to point out that if, you know, the government doesn't point to any sort of normal ambiguity in the term audiology in the sense that there's an alternative definition that would mean something other than treatment of a hearing disorder, nor does it argue that there's any way to characterize mapping as something other than treatment of a hearing disorder. The government tries to say that there's ambiguity, you know, by comparing this provision to the assisted technology service provision, but as Judge Edwards points out, there's no reason that the statute needs to be read that a related service must qualify as both assisted technology service and related service.
You're totally right about that. That's got to be right. But they do also argue that this is an education statute, and so we should view it, this court, we should view it in terms of the purposes of the statute, in terms of the types of services normally provided by audiologists who work in schools.
Right, and our point on that is that Congress has been clear which of the related services should be limited to the school setting by including school nursing services, and has been clear the others by not including a similar limitation. Thank you.
Thank you.